to the shadows. Old stories line the shelves of our dusty archives. Stories of dreams, mystery, horror. We would like to bring one of our early radio tales back to life during this half hour. Let's see. Oh, here's a very darkened alcove marked Howard Phillips Lovecraft. It's seldom entered, judging from the dust and cobwebs. Inside, a strange green vaporous density appears to cling to the dread, almost unutterably repugnant decay of the walls. And dimly audible at times is the faintest echo of some lost, tormented soul. Or possibly some ancient creature whispering out of the darkness primordial and forbidden sounds. Not quite words, not quite utterances. So low. Shubnagurath, Azathoth, Yalathrotep. Words not unfamiliar to those who have read the monstrous and abhorred Necronomicon of the mad and crazed Arab, Abdul Alhazred. Indeed, no series of horror tales would be complete without H.P. Lovecraft, for which we have reserved our final two programs. The one test, writes the author, of the really weird is simply this, whether or not there be excited in the reader a profound sense of dread and of contact with unknown spheres and powers, a subtle attitude of awed listening, as if for the beating of black wings, or the scratching of outside shapes and entities on the known universe's utmost rim. Well, 2.5 decades have passed since the story you are about to hear was first heard on the air. The tape itself is lined here and there with tiny pools of green, sticky stuff. It's an early story by Lovecraft, but it gives some hint of what was later to emerge. It's called The Outsider. Unhappy is he to whom the memories of childhood bring only fear and sadness. I know not where I was born. I remember only this castle, infinitely old and infinitely horrible, full of dark passages and dismal high-ceilinged chambers. The stones in the crumbling corridors seemed always hideously damp, and the smell everywhere, coming up out of the deeper passages from the remains there, the generations of bones that led endlessly down into the earth. The light was a dim and uniform gray, throwing no shadows. Outside in the forest, there was no sunlight able to come through the trees. The branches thickly interwove overhead, cutting out all sight of anything above. Except there was one black tower of the castle that reached beyond the trees. It rose up inside into a dark and inaccessible height. There was no stairway. It could not be ascended save by an impossible climb up the sheer wall, stone by stone. I must have lived in this place all my childhood, but I cannot measure the time. Someone must have cared for my needs, Yet I cannot recall any person except myself or anything else alive. I think that whoever nursed me must have been terribly aged. My first conception of a living person was of something distorted, shriveled, decaying. I remember there was such a corpse. I often went to it with a feeling of reverence and attachment. It was a woman, ancient, lying as she had died, partly eaten around the throat and chest. The terrible gesture of horror in her sprawled position and opened mouth. I would sometimes roam the passage where she lay. I seemed to be drawn there. I wanted to kneel before it, to lie my head against it. Once I recall, I reached out to touch her, and she seemed to draw away in horror as if some instinct of recoil had penetrated to the very bones of the hideous thing. It fell off the ledge, breaking apart on the stones below. I dared not touch her again. Otherwise, to me, there was nothing grotesque in the bones and skeletons that populated my world. They were to me more natural than the colored pictures of living people I found in many of the ancient books that lined shelves and piled corners. From such books, I learned all that I know. No teacher urged or guided me. And I do not recall hearing any human voice in all those years, not even my own. Although I read of speech, I had never thought to try speaking aloud myself. I felt conscious of youth because I remembered so little. I'd wander outside by the moat, filled with the thick and stagnant water. I imagined it to be the great seas I saw in the picture books. I even constructed a boat, a toy boat, with masts, and set it upon the water. But the slime held it. It couldn't sail. I watched it slip through the surface, sinking slowly, inch by inch down. Down till it disappeared. Across the moat, under the dark, mute trees, I would often lie and dream for hours about what I read in the books, and would longingly picture myself there in the sunny world beyond the forest. The pictures would fade. They were not real. Oh, I wanted to make them real. I'd try to escape the forest. I'd run, but the farther I ran from the castle, the more dense became the shade. The thickness filled me with a terrible fear. Until I forgot my search and turned back. So through endless twilights I dreamed and waited. For what? Ugly skulls looked up at me, their gaping jaws, their silence. In my madness I'd crush them. Who? Who put me here? Why? Why? My longing for light grew so frantic I could rest no more. The tower that reached up into the dark absorbed me. I stood beneath it and raised my hands into the abyss. There must be a way. There must be. I stood flat against the stones, grasping them. Strange, I could hold on to the stones more easily than I thought. I pulled myself up, stone by stone, round the tower and up. And looked above. There was no end to the darkness. Below, the dim light seemed to be fading. But I had no fear. Oh, no fear. No fear, only great anticipation. Why hadn't I tried before? There were ledges in the rock and places to hold. Places to hold. Hours later, I had reached the top. I clung to the stone. My head against a roof, a stone panel that would lift. Oh, the climb had strengthened, not weakened me. Oh, it took a mere effort now to brace my shoulders against it and push up and out from the wall. The effort, the strain, was pure joy. It felt as if something else was working, some other thing in me that drew me out. I was out. The stone had fallen shut. But I had reached the outside. And overhead was the radiant full moon. I had never seen it before, except in dreams and in vague visions. Memory. Ah, sweet light. Fell upon me But where was I? How high above the trees? It seemed I was on a stone platform, but vast, vast, an observatory. But there were columns about, broken, and beyond the platform other stones, small ones with inscriptions and dates. And between the stones, Earth! There stretched around me nothing less than the solid earth, housed with marble slabs and columns, and overshadowed by an ancient stone church whose ruined spires gleamed spectrally in the moonlight. The earth. Was this insanity? Or dreaming? Dreaming. There was a familiarity. Oh, but no, this was the world, and I would go forth to meet it. There were meadows with the smell of grass and trees that did not cover the sky. Oh, and houses. Some ancient ruins that my mind tried to reconstruct, but others with lights. Ah, I could see figures inside. Lights. My mind played tricks. If I looked too long, the lights would fade. The figures melt away. The walls seem ancient ruins. As if my own castle back there. No, I wouldn't. I walked on. I almost knew the road. On. In a direction. Yes. Inevitably in a direction. A large lit house, surrounded by a park, with great windows, ablaze with light and sound. There was a courtyard. Oh, this was the world. Oh, how brilliant it was. How merry. I had never heard human voices before. Yet it was familiar. Some of the faces seemed to hold expressions that brought up remote recollections. Oh, they smiled. They talked to each other. They laughed. Oh, world. The windows before me were two doors. I put my hands to each to enter. And pushed open into the joyous room. And the people became silent. They all stared with a strange and familiar expression. I tried to speak to them. But it was hard to speak. No! I walked toward them, but they fled! Every face distorted, screams, hands covering their eyes, stumbling away. Wait! Like mist, they faded before me. They seemed to melt into the walls, through doors, dragging each other. No, wait! Wait. They had all been gathered before a wall, which now stood bare. With gilded designs bordering an archway. But the arch was glass, reflecting the room. There was only one figure in it. Vague as I approached, then more and more clearly, I could see it. A compound of all that is unclean, unwelcome, abnormal, and detestable. A ghoulish shade of decay, antiquity, and dissolution. A dripping, putrid eidolon of some unwholesome revelation. The awful bearing of that which the merciful earth should always hide. It was not, or no longer, of this world. Yet in its eaten away bony outlines I saw a leering, abhorrent travesty on the human shape. Mine, no. I eyes as I approached held mine open. I couldn't turn away, but I would wipe out the sight. I'd reach out. I stretched out my fingers to the abomination, to touch a cold and unyielding surface of polished glass. But it would yield! It would yield! It would yield! Ah! At that last moment, I had recognized him. When I returned to the graveyard, the stone door was immovable. Now I ride with the mocking and friendly ghouls on the night wind and play by day in the catacombs. I know that light is not for me, save that of the moon. Yet in my new wildness and freedom, I welcome the bitterness of alienage. For I know always that I am an outsider. An outsider, stranger in this century, for a time, a stranger among those who are still men.
The Outsider by H.P. Lovecraft. Adapted and performed by Eric Bauersfeld, with technical production by John Whiting. Special technical production for this program was by Jim McKee. Two of Lovecraft's literary inspirations were Edgar Allan Poe and Nathaniel Hawthorne. Style and ideas from these two authors he freely drew upon and transformed. For instance, the idea for The Outsider apparently came from Hawthorne's Journal of a Solitary Man. Here is a brief passage. I dreamed one bright afternoon that I was walking through Broadway and seeking to cheer myself with warm and busy life of that far-famed promenade. I found myself in this animated place with a dim and misty idea that it was not my proper place, that I had ventured into the crowd with some singularity of dress or aspect which made me ridiculous. Every face grew pale, the laughter was hushed, and the passengers on all sides fled as from an embodied pestilence. I passed not one step farther, but through my eyes on a looking-glass which stood deep within the nearest shop. At first glimpse of my own figure, I awoke with a horrible sensation of self-terror and self-loathing. I had been promenading Broadway in my shroud. There are numerous passages from Hawthorne and Lovecraft's commonplace book. We leave you with the following entry. A defunct nightmare, which had perished in the midst of its wickedness, and left its flabby corpse on the breast of the tormented one, to be gotten rid of as it might. Well, that's all for now. Come and visit our archives again for another tale from the shadows. Real soon.